Hello there. Today is Tuesday, February 25th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, a stadium full of tears at a public memorial for Kobe Bryant and his daughter Gigi.
God knew they couldn't be on this earth without each other. He had to bring them home to heaven together.
Is the coronavirus heading toward a pandemic? Also ahead, a pioneering black female mathematician who calculated rocket trajectories for NASA early space missions has died. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, the growing spread of the coronavirus has rattled stock markets, with indexes experiencing sharp losses in every continent. The Dow Jones Industrial Average in the United States plunged over 1,000 points, a drop of 3.56%. The S&P 500 also had its worst day in 2 years, wiping out its year-to-date gain as well. Authorities in China and other hard-hit countries have enforced lockdowns that have paralyzed production, interrupted supply chains, and disrupted tourism and other key service sectors. VOA's Ardita Dunalari examines the risks to the global economy if the coronavirus becomes a pandemic, as some health experts fear it might.
Stock markets from the United States to Asia and Europe have been hit hard as health authorities confirm new pockets of coronavirus infection from the Middle East to Europe.
The market is now coming to recognize that this epidemic has far from peaked. It now looks like it's spreading, and it's going to be causing a lot of disruptions to global supply chains, to the travel industry, to tourism, to a whole lot of things.
Coronavirus has triggered widespread fear and increasingly severe reactions from authorities in scores of countries, imposing lockdowns with paralyzing effects on commerce, especially in China, the world's second largest economy.
What we have in China is a situation where 150 million people are locked down. You know, so these people who went home for the vacation, for the New Year vacation, they now can't return to work.
As companies feel the impact, so too will consumers.
We're going to see real economic impacts from this outbreak. We've already seen it, for example, when Apple says that there's going to be a palpable impact on its ability to produce iPhones in the near term.
Some believe the economic impact will be intense but short-lived. Analyst Mark Hamrick likens coronavirus to a hurricane. Once it passes, recovery begins and activity gradually returns to normal.
For investors who are only focused on the short term, these are very real impacts. For investors who are focused on the intermediate and long terms, they're going to look beyond this and say, we will live to invest and fight another day.
But researcher Desmond Lochman believes the impact on China will be more long-lasting, with companies looking to diversify their supply chains so they can be less reliant on China in the future.
Companies will draw lessons from this experience. You know, my expectation is that this will be a drain on the Chinese economy long term. It's not going to look that attractive for foreign investment.
Coronavirus won't be the last economically disruptive pathogen to spread across borders and continents. The question, analysts say, is what lessons nations and companies draw from the outbreak and whether the global economy becomes more resilient to future shocks. Ardita Dunalari, VOA News, Washington.
Well, meanwhile, the death toll in Italy from the coronavirus outbreak stands at 7, with more than 200 cases confirmed. Italian authorities are working around the clock, putting in place unprecedented measures in an effort to curb the surge in coronavirus cases in at least 6 regions in Italy's industrial north. Schools and universities are closed. Across Europe, there are growing concerns about the spread. Joining us to talk more about it is Paris-based journalist Catherine Field. Catherine, how concerning is this, and what are leaders in Europe doing?
In terms of Europe-wide, this is a bit of a problem because on the one hand, you do have the European Union, you've got 27 member states, but the problem there is that healthcare, anything to do with health, is a national competency. So it's the responsibility of each member state. So you don't have an overall body looking after this. That having been said, the European Union has just within the last 12 hours come up with more cash. They've come up with 232 million euros to be given out to help in clinical research, treating and combating the coronavirus. Of that, 15 million will also be used for diagnosis and research in Africa. So there is a lot going on that level in terms of science, the clinical research into the coronavirus. There is a lot of talk between all these 26 member states of the so-called Schengen Agreement about what they're going to do with the open borders. Let's not forget, those Schengen countries do not have any borders. There are no customs checks. There are no passport checks. So people can move quite freely between them. For the time being, the European Union is saying that there will be no border checks put in across the EU. They say that the World Health Organization has not asked for them, and they say that any changes to that border-free Europe would be proportional, coordinated, and would be based on scientific proof. So from that, we can see that what Europe is trying to do is to organize, perhaps even put measures into place, but the main thing being not create panic.
How are people reacting?
People are very concerned. I'll give you two instances that happened in France today. One involved a bus that arrived in southeastern France from Milan, Italy, the area where there has been the outbreak of the coronavirus. The driver was seen to have been coughing, and people on the bus got worried, and then the bus was taken into a security zone. It was kept apart. The bus driver was immediately taken off to hospital. The passengers were kept on board. They were not allowed to disembark. It turned out a couple of hours later that the driver didn't have the coronavirus. We also had an issue here in Paris, in the French capital, at a police station in one of the districts nearby to Chinatown. A woman went into the police station. She coughed. There were fears she had the coronavirus, and the whole area was put in lockdown for several hours. So you're seeing a lot of people a little suspicious of what's going on, because they're seeing on their television screens and seeing you on their mobile phones just how quickly this coronavirus can spread. And of course, there is still this major concern that particularly in Italy, just across the border from France, that patient zero has still not been found. They still have not found the person that brought the virus to Italy.
So what do you think overall the biggest challenges are ahead for the governments in Europe, and as well as residents and people in general? I know, you know, people everywhere are concerned.
Particularly in Europe, the problem is going to be, how do you put in place the sort of draconian measures that were put in place, say, in China, here in Europe, which are Western liberal democracies? How can you keep people in their homes, tell them they can't go out? That's going to prove very, very difficult. Containing the virus, if it does come to places like France to any great extent, will be quite easy, because France in particular has a very extensive public health network. Just within the last 24 hours, the government has set up more than 108 hospitals to have special units to deal with possible coronavirus cases. But that whole question of imposing lockdowns, of putting in place draconian measures to make people stay at home, that's going to be difficult.
All right. Paris-based reporter Catherine Field, we thank you for being with us. Well, the coronavirus outbreak has upended air travel and caused people to question the safety of cruises. Travelers have been canceling trips to Asia and have gone as far as to refrain from eating Chinese food prepared in countries that don't have a widespread outbreak of the coronavirus. VOA's Carol Pearson reports on the most important safety measure when traveling.
Doctors have warned for a long time that an infectious disease anywhere is potentially a disease everywhere. Case in point is the global spread of HIV/AIDS. Another case, SARS, severe acute respiratory syndrome. It was discovered in China in February 2003, and like the current coronavirus epidemic, the government had to build special hospitals. Before SARS was finished 6 months later, it had spread to more than two dozen countries, mostly through air travel. Toronto was especially hard hit, with more than 400 cases and 44 deaths.
Air transportation network is the main pathway for a global disease spread.
Think of all the things you and tens of thousands of others touch at an airport and in an airplane. A study from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology shows that very few people in an airport have clean hands. And if we want to slow an epidemic, we have to have clean hands.
First of all, we try to calculate the rate of hand washing around the world.
Previous studies showed that 70% of people wash their hands after using a toilet. And out of that number, only 6 or 7% do it correctly.
So correctly, I mean they wash their hands with soap and water for at least 15 seconds. We did some back of the envelope calculations and we found out that if you visit an airport any time in the world, you will realize that only 1 over 5 people have clean hands.
Nikolaides then looked at what he calls super spreader airports.
A super spreader airport is an airport that combines two characteristics. The first one is that has a lot of traffic, okay, has a lot of people around. And the other characteristic is that it's connected with many other airports, with many other international flights.
These airports are basically the 10 largest in the world. John F. Kennedy in New York, Los Angeles International, London Heathrow, Hong Kong International, Beijing Capital are among them. Airports and airplanes are close, confined areas with large mobile populations who have dirty hands. Nikolaides calculated that if 60% of travelers had cleaned hands, the potential to slow a global disease rose to 69%. But even if just 30% of travelers had clean hands, the spread of disease could drop by 24%. Nikolaides says educating the public is the key. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. The U.S. wants Afghan's president to defer his inauguration over concerns it could inflame an election feud and jeopardize U.S.-led peacemaking efforts. Turkish casualties rise in Syria, but Ankara is wary of confronting Russia. Haiti has canceled its Mardi Gras festivities in Port-au-Prince, and Super Tuesday looms as the biggest day in the presidential primary calendar in the U.S. Find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. President Donald Trump Monday said that the United States will sign an agreement to sell $3 billion worth of U.S. helicopters and other equipment to India's military. The announcement came as Trump spoke at a welcome rally in the city of Ahmedabad, where a crowd of more than 100,000 people gathered to hear from him and Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi. VOA White House correspondent Patsy Wuttakuswara has details.
Namaste. Namaste.
Massive crowds greet the American president on his first day in India during a Namaste Trump rally as promised by Prime Minister Narendra Modi.
I remember when I went to Washington, when I first met President Trump. He had told me India has a true friend in the White House. President Trump has always displayed his special love for India.
Both men underscored the importance of bilateral relations and lavished praise on each other.
Everybody loves him, but I will tell you this, he's very tough.
The rally was held in the world's largest cricket stadium in Modi's home state of Gujarat. The crowd estimated to be above 100,000.
We have to look at the fact that both are nationalists and populists. For them, they derive their strength from the people. from events and rallies.
Trump touted the sale of $3 billion worth of Apache helicopters and other American military hardware to India, but as expected, no trade deal was announced. The U.S. president's visit comes on the heels of protests against India's new citizenship law that critics say marginalizes the country's more than 200 million Muslims, a charge the Modi government denies. At the rally, Trump hinted at India's status as a pluralistic society.
Your nation has always been admired around the earth as the place where millions upon millions of Hindus and Muslims and Sikhs and Jains, Buddhists, Christians and Jews worship side by side in harmony.
Analysts expect that's about as far as Trump would push the issue, as well on the subject of Kashmir, a Muslim-majority region that is claimed in its entirety by both India and Pakistan.
The State Department does say that we want India to do more and to abide by its constitutional rights and for all its minorities, but top-level U.S. officials have avoided any statement on India's Human Rights, Citizenship Act, or Kashmir per se. And I think that will remain.
The President and First Lady also visited the home of Mahatma Gandhi, leader of nonviolent resistance against India's British rule. Ending his first day in India, the U.S. President, who once owned the former Trump Taj Mahal Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey, took in views of the real Indian iconic landmark. Patsy Wida Kuswara, VOA News at the White House.
Well, the World Food Program says it needs $103 million to meet urgent food assistance needs in Zimbabwe, where more than half of the population is food insecure due to recurring droughts and a declining economy. Columbus Mafunga reports from eastern Mudzi district, one of the country's most affected areas.
Zimbabwe's Mudzi district on the border with Mozambique is one of the areas most affected by severe food shortages. 75-year-old farmer Justina Marimbindi says months of recurring drought decimated their crops.
My granary is now empty. This is my field. We farm, but it does not bear fruits. I sold my goats. There is no hope that there is anything that will come out of the fields. We now depend on these handouts.
But not every Zimbabwean who needs food aid is getting it. 94-year-old Rudia Kugwenya was turned away at the local distribution center.
I was told that my name is not on the list. Maybe they'll give me next time. For now, I have to depend on my daughter. That's why I've come to her home after I was not given anything. But she needs food assistance too, as her crops failed and she needs to feed her children.
Recent rains in the area are bringing some hope that Zimbabwe's devastating droughts may be over. But the World Food Program says almost 8 million people will still require food aid until the next harvest.
Difficult for rural populations who are struggling with the lack of rain to grow enough food to meet their needs, and difficult for urban populations who are unable to find the piecemeal work that they normally rely on and are seeing rising prices and sometimes stock shortfalls in the shops. So we're scaling up our programs, but in order to sustain urgent food assistance and resilience programs, we need an additional $103 million for the next 6 months.
But even if food supplies can recover, Zimbabwe's struggling economy and sky-high inflation will continue to squeeze the country's most vulnerable. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Mudzi, Zimbabwe.
Celebrities, athletes, family members, and thousands of fans poured into the Staples Center in Los Angeles Monday to honor basketball great Kobe Bryant, who died last month in a helicopter crash that also killed his 13-year-old daughter Gianna and seven others. VOA's Mike O'Sullivan has more.
Kobe Bryant joined the Los Angeles Lakers straight out of high school in 1996. And played with the team for 20 years, most of that time here at Staples Center. The sports icon and his 13-year-old daughter died with seven others when their helicopter crashed January 26th near Los Angeles. There were tributes from Bryant's widow, Vanessa Bryant, grieving for her husband and daughter, and from a tearful Michael Jordan, who remembered his younger rival as a brother. called a celebration of life, there was laughter mixed with tears and musical tributes from Christina Aguilera, Beyoncé, and Alicia Keys. For many fans, Bryant was part of the family.
You know, growing up, that's all we watched in the 1990s up to the 2000s, my parents, my brother, everyone. So this today is very important for us as a family. My brother's here. My dad is here. I'm here.
I didn't know him personally, but he's been part of my life longer than some of my actual friends. Like, and you could trace back like certain moments of him and where you were at and what you were going through at the same time.
Kobe Bryant growing up, he was my idol. So I played basketball myself and, you know, just pay my respect here today.
I watched him grow. I watched Kobe come into the league. I was there in D.C. for his last game when he retired. And it just means a lot to me right now.
A sports legend and his daughter who live on in the hearts of his fans. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
And you are listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Well, pioneering NASA mathematician Katherine Johnson has died at the age of 101. AP Entertainment correspondent Margie Sarzaletta has a look at her career.
NASA tweets it is celebrating the life of Katherine Johnson, her legacy of excellence, and her work to break down racial barriers. Johnson was one of the so-called computers who calculated rocket trajectories and Earth orbits by hand in the early days of the space program. She and other black women worked in a racially segregated computing unit of what's now the Langley Research Center in Hampton, Virginia. Johnson was portrayed by Taraji P. Henson in the 2016 film Hidden Figures. Johnson received the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the nation's highest honor, in 2015. I'm Archie Zaraletta.
A popular children's cartoon by Nigerian animator Ademu Waziri's popular cartoon Bino and Fino flipped the narrative on dominant foreign animation in Africa when it started a decade ago by promoting African culture and African stories. Bino and Fino has done it again, spreading to 15 countries and now targeting markets in Europe. Timothy Obizo reports from Abuja.
Millions of young children can now sing along with the Bino and Fino theme song, evidence that the Nigerian-made cartoon is gaining traction both home and abroad. Nigerian animator Ademu Waziri says he started the Bino and Fino animation series to promote African stories globally.
A lot of the shows on children's TV in Nigeria are not from Nigeria. So I noticed that I thought that was too much of an imbalance. Especially as Africa's most populous nation. It didn't make any sense that our children were watching mainly pretty much, especially when it comes to animation and cartoons, 100% foreign shows. So that was what basically was the spark.
So far, Bino and Fino is the most successful Nigerian animation brand globally. Apart from Nigeria and its neighbors in Africa, the cartoon airs overseas in countries like the US, Britain, and parts of Europe. The series has brought success, but also come at a cost, says Waziri.
To actually produce a series takes a lot of finance, a lot of time. It takes about maybe 2 to 3 years to finish a series, at which point you're not making any revenue. So you have to find the team. And on top of that, a lot of people were not trained up to produce animation in Nigeria to that quality level. So you have to do a lot of training.
Still, most of the cartoons broadcast in Nigeria come from abroad. But children like six-year-old Captain are enthralled by Bino and Fino.
I love Bino. Fino is an interesting cartoon. They never argue. They're always good. They have fun. They never lie. They're always good. They're always nice. They're friendly. They always play with each other nicely.
Parents are also pleased that their children can learn about African culture and values.
They can actually relate to it. Like, my kids are always bickering at each other sometimes, and I could tell when there was a scene where their dad asked them why they weren't talking to each other, I could relate to that. And that's why I really like it. And it doesn't appear foreign to me.
Nigeria's animation industry is still in its infancy, and so is much smaller than its international counterparts. Low funding, lack of skilled manpower, and a weak distribution system are major limitations. But that has not stopped Nigerian animators like Waziri from pressing ahead to distribute African content on global screens. Timothy Yobiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
Madonna has just made history again, this time as Billboard announces she is the first and only musician to have 50 number one hits on any chart. Her latest success, I Don't Search, I Find, is Madonna's latest number one chart topper, which officially pushed her over the edge to break this record. And again, not simply on that list, but on any list. She already had the record for the most number one hits on any one Billboard chart, but this is yet another milestone for the singer, often referred to as the Queen of Pop. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. We thank you very much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Polk. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Finally enough love.